Okay, so tonight's shmooze is sponsored by a extremely, extremely dear friend to me, to the Kolo. He prefers to say anonymous, but an extremely special person. And maybe I hope to remember to mention him at the end because what I want to discuss, he really embodies this in a great way. So I hope I remember to get back to that. And it was Leila Nishmas, his grandfather. Your site is tonight, I understood, is Leila Nishmas Avram Ben Chaim. Second thing, I want to give a very warm welcome to Sammy Cohen, our new member for the week. And I'm proud to say this is our first member from Detroit since the great Benny Clyde. It's a major milestone. Maybe even bigger, maybe bigger than that, is our first not soldier. We might have a soldier or two before, I don't remember. But our first active soldier. He's on active duty somehow here in Lakewood, Pennsylvania. It's such an amazing thing to have you. Mamish of tremendous bracha. We thought we had merits, guys. Now we really have merits, guys. If the guys don't know, don't get scared away. He's actually a Mavasar guy. He used to be one of you, and then he moved on. Bigger and better things. It's an amazing thing. Amazing thing you're here. Tremendous list for us, and we're gonna hopefully milk you for everything you can offer us. And it's great. Big list. Tremendous list to have you. Okay, so we have a new sefer. So there's a lot to talk about, especially in the beginning, for sure. So I just want to focus on one akuda. So Moshe Rabbeinu speaks, which is a big inyan, for sure, a big inyan. We'll talk about that. And he says very subtle hints of Moshe. He speaks, I'll call Yisrael, Be'ivar Yardim, Amidbar, Ma'arava, Molsuf. It sounds like places, being Parim, being Tofa, Lavan, Chazir. It doesn't sound like anything's going on in the pasuk. But Rashi, Chazal, make note that there's a lot going on in the pasuk. And every reference that Moshe Rabbeinu makes to a place, he's actually alluding to a certain incident that happened at that place or a certain inyan that he wants Klal Yisrael to know about. And he's highlighting certain things that Klal Yisrael should still be working on as they travel towards Eretz Yisrael. So when it comes to the last part of the pasuk, the Dizov, so Rashi quotes, Dizov is a reference, Ochichon ala Ego. It was a Tofacha Ochit al Ego. What does it have to do with Zav? Maybe the obvious reference, but it's even more than that. She'asu b'shvil rov Zav she'hoya lehem. The reason, or the cause of Chet Ego is because Klal Yisrael, they had a lot of gold. She'nemar, the pasuk says, v'chesef herbesi lo v'zav asu l'bal. When you have a lot of gold, and you have a lot of money, it ends up, you end up in Avodah Zarah, end up in Chet Ego. Again, practically, because the Ego is made from gold, obviously. But gold does something. Gold, money, wealth affects people. And when you get to that point, certain, maybe call freedom, independence, maybe call hefkeiros, certain things happen to a person when he has access to wealth. So it's really not my style. I'd like to say things that I think of because I feel like I'm talking from my heart. But it happens to be a couple times already this summer, things that Rav Yerucham pointed to really grabbed me, and tonight again, something he said really grabbed me. So I'm going to say over, in my words, an inyan that I understood him to be discussing. He quotes a Gemara in Brachas. I think it's a well-known Gemara that says Moshe Rabbeinu hitiach dvarim klapi mala. Moshe, what does it mean? Hitiach dvarim klapi mala. It means he complained. He accused. He accused Hashem. Va'amar v'dizav, and he said, Hashem v'dizav. You know, in the psukim, it sounds like, in the psukim, he was giving musar to Klal Yisrael. But the Gemara Bracha says, when he said v'dizav, he was also giving musar to Hashem. How did he give musar to Hashem? He said, b'shvil kesev v'zav, she'ishpata lehem l'Yisrael, it's because of you. He blamed him. He said, it's his fault. Because of all the money that you gave to Klal Yisrael, Ad she'amru dai, that they couldn't have enough of it. He gave so much money to Klal Yisrael, they already, you know, their pockets were overflowing. So because of that, hu garam she'asu as ego. So you're the cause. You're the reason. It's because of all the benefits you gave to Klal Yisrael that induced them to commit cheta ego. And he gave him a mashal. He said, "Ein ari noem mitof kuf b'shal tevin. A lion doesn't get excited when he has a basket of straw. Elamitoch kupa shavaser. If you put in front of a lion a basket of meat, so the lion gets excited, and he's almost, it's his natural instinct to run after, to devour the meat. So what do you think is going to happen? You gave Klal Yisrael a lot of money, a lot of gold, a lot of wealth, and then one thing leads to another, and next thing you know, you have cheta ego. Akan the Gemara Brachas. Unbelievable Gemara. The similar to the Gemara is like that also when it comes to different averos that Klal Yisrael did in the Midbar. And certain averos, Moshe presents to Hashem almost again like a complaint that what do you expect? You put them in this situation, you put them in front of this type of environment, and you don't think that they're going to succumb to the allure? You don't think they'll succumb to the draw? There's a reality of humanity. Humanity is pulled in different directions based on the circles, based on what's going on around them. You fill a person's pockets with money, it's going to pull in places. And if you expose a person to certain inyanim, it's also going to have a major effect. So, Akan. Now we could talk a little bit. So, when you talk to people, my experience, when you talk to people, sometimes people are struggling with a certain inyanim. And when you talk to people who are struggling with a spectrum of different issues, so they talk to you and this is difficult for me and I have a challenge here and I don't know how to get out of it, I don't know how to deal with it, and whatever the inyan is. And there's many inyanim that people struggle with. And people, when they're struggling for different inyanim, I'm not talking about the people who go for brachas and mikubalim and try to heebie-jeebie their way out of it. People want just normal aitzes. How do you get out of, how do you build yourself up from certain places? You want to develop, you want to grow. You don't want to be stagnant and stuck in the same place that you were for however long, but it's not pleasant. A person experiences feelings of unpleasantness and he's just not happy. He's not feeling good about himself. He's not feeling productive. And sometimes it happens day in and day out, and it happens again and again over and over. And you get stuck in these of its cycles or habitual type behaviors. And you want to climb out, and you go to somebody, you speak to a Rebbe, you speak to a therapist, you speak to your parents, you speak to a friend, you speak to people, try to get guidance how to climb out of these habitual behaviors that you might find yourself in on occasion. And Rav Yerucham talks about this, but I'll say from my own experience that sometimes when you're sitting across from such a person, of course you want to help him, of course you give him, you help him in the best way that you can, the best ideas, the best guidance, the best advice that you could give him. But sometimes it crosses your mind, and you have to be careful not to say it out loud, that you're like 10 steps ahead of me. You're talking about an inyan now that you're so committed to. You're committed to, and I'll explain why you're committed to the inyan. You're very committed to an inyan, and you ask me, how do you circumvent, how do you get around, how do you climb out of a certain inyan? You're 10 steps ahead of me. If you would have spoken to me 10 steps ago, probably 11 actually, if you would have spoken to me 11 steps ago, maybe we could have figured out a way. But now you're already 10 steps ahead of me. 10 steps ahead of me? It's like Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, you gave them a ton of gold, you gave them access, you gave them the interest, you gave them the desire, you gave them the allure, and now what do you want? I'm going to go tell Klal Yisrael, guys, stop, no cheta ego. It's too late. It's too late. So Klal Yisrael is going to come to Moshe Rabbeinu. Oh, great to see you. Finally, you came down from the mountain. Help us that we shouldn't do cheta ego. You got to break the luchos at that point. There's nothing else to do. You got to just break the luchos. Break the luchos out of Moshe Rabbeinu knew what he was doing, obviously. I'm not saying he did it out of frustration. But for our sake, for us, to bring it down, to water down the Maisa for us, out of frustration, you just want to break the luchos. You just want to escape. You want to run away because you can't figure out how to climb out of it. And the problem is that if you would have spoken to somebody 11 steps ago, then maybe we could have discussed it. Your life could have been different. Why are you talking now, 10 steps in? And that's okay. So you can say, okay, excuse me, I'm sorry, I didn't know. Okay, so what, now it's over? I got to wave the white flag because I spoke to you too late? No, for sure not. For sure not. But now we got to retrace your steps. We got to go back. Step 9, step 8, how'd you find yourself here? Step 7, step 6, step 5, step 4. We'll talk about certain details. But everybody, the reason why I like to speak, and I know people don't like it, but I like to speak vague, because I want to talk about a lot of things. And if I talk about one thing, you say, oh, phew, that doesn't apply to me. I'm good. No, I wanted it to apply to you. So a person has to understand his inyanim. A person has to figure out, and we all, everybody has different things they commit to. I'm calling it, you commit to them. And then when you start to decide, when you make that choice, that difficult choice to then change, but you're so deep in, and at that point, it needs an entire upheaval of everything you've been doing. I'll share with you a small mashal. I was talking to a person I really look up to when it comes to business, a big mentor of mine. God, I don't do business. But I still feel a lot of admiration to people who are successful in certain ways in business. I'm not talking about money. Money's not something I get excited about. But I get excited about people who are intelligent and strategic and thoughtful. So a guy, a mentor of mine, I was talking to him recently, and he told me, this could be pasha, it could be to everybody very, it is a very simple idea after I express it, but to me, I wanted, when he presented this to me, I put a lot of thought into it. And he told me there's a very big difference when it comes to business between building, if the phrase is not accurate or you like a better phrase, you could substitute it with whatever is better, but I'm going to say it in the way that it landed in my mind. There's a difference between building income and building wealth. Choose your own words if you don't like mine. Building income and building wealth. Most people are interested in building income. What that means is that they want the business to churn out money. So whenever the business churns out money, boom, in the pocket, boom, we're going for vacation. That's called you're building income. A person wants to live a nice lifestyle, comfortable, very comfortable, lavish, luxurious lifestyle. So most people do this. This is just normal human impulse. That when you build a business, you're looking for more dollars in the pocket. And as you build, you just see it, okay, more money in the pocket, more money in the account, more money to spend, going to Vegas, big dreams, bigger vacations, bigger. That's one way to go. You build income. There's another type of businessman who builds wealth. Wealth is an entirely different process, entirely different method. What wealth often means that you will lose money the first few years. Certainly not make money the first few years. It's the business is not going to be a profitable business because every dollar that comes out of the business, that all the income that's coming out, boom, right back in. You're investing again. Now, how much money's in the pocket? You might be struggling for rent for a little bit. Hopefully you do this when you're younger. You might be struggling to pay the bills for a little bit, but it's okay. You're not in a rush, you have a long life ahead of you, but your interest is not to be the income guy, to, you know, schwitz and shul and to make a bigger kiddish and to pay for all the schnapps and to show off everybody you got a new car and you bought a new house and look, you're, you know, a big macher in the community. No, you have a bigger vision. Your vision is you want to build wealth. And wealth means you want to build, if it's a company, if it's a, whatever it is that you're interested in business, in building, but that demands that there's a continuous investment. The money that comes out, boom, back in. And what do you end up with? Maybe you give yourself a salary. You give yourself a normal salary. Again, I'm not talking real money. I'm talking small money. You give yourself an 80,000 starting salary, $80,000 a year. The business is making money. Business is profitable. But all the profits go back into the business. Why? Because you're not interested in today. You're interested, and you have a big dream. You want to build wealth, long-term wealth. You want to build a company. You want to build something extremely, extremely profitable. And usually when you're pulling out every dime from the business, you're not going to end up with a very profitable business. And I thought to myself, it's such a great mashal. First of all, I like the Inyan. The Inyan interests me. I think it's a great way to understand people. The reason why I think business, for me, I have a lot of enjoyment from business because it really helps me understand people. And you see how people operate. Most people operate that they want the short-term gain. That's why, you know, when COVID happened, there was such a run. Everybody was running to open up the Robinhood accounts. The Robinhood accounts were like, boom, you had teenagers. That was the opening summer for COVID. I mean, every kid that first summer in Kobe, he was making $5,000, $10,000. You know, every kid had a Robinhood account and Bain Astarim, every kid was buying new stocks and like, oh, I made $20,000 during the break. And I was like, where is all this money coming from? And then they got like government checks for unemployment, none of them were working. Nothing made sense. Cash was flowing. It was a great time for the kollel. Very, very gishma. Doggies every night, mamas like that. It was amazing. And that's what kids got excited about. Yeah, I've had in my shiur, I'm not proud of this. I'm embarrassed about this, and I've given very few things. I give straight, blunt, straightforward, to his face, Moser. This is one of the inyanim that I've done that in my life. Got a couple guys in the shiur I've had experience with that are scam artists, straight scam artists. And in today's generation, what it means is that they play games online. Online, they figured out a way that if you sign up for an account, every time you sign up for an account, you get $100 free to gamble with. But then you open up a new account. The next thing you know, your account could have 25 grand because you spend the whole day opening up new accounts with fake social security numbers. Again, don't try this at home. But I've had people like that in my shiur. Not just not proud. It's people that I spoke to very bluntly. There's only two that come to mind. And both of those people, till today, don't look at me, don't talk to me. And I'm 100% okay with that, because when they go down, I'm not going down with them. And there's no suffix in my mind, they're going down. And I warn every Rebbe that if you let this kid keep doing what he's doing, it's on your head. It's on your head. He's going straight to Orange. He's going to end up God knows where, in some Alcatraz somewhere. You know, a Nebuch, his family's not going to have him around, and he's just destroying the guy. But this guy has such a... I see dollar bills. I see like another hundred, another grand. And you get like crazy about this. You're just interested in the now. But people who are really interested in businesses, real business people, they're building wealth. They're not building income. And I'll say, because we're learning, so I'll say just one more mashal. It's not a mashal, it's precise. But one more mashal always bothered me, a mimer, that it's, we're going to get to the sugya of tzitzis. We say that the tcheles, the actual tcheles, is dome liyam, and the yam is dome lirakia, and the rakia is dome lirakia sa'akovit. I imagine everybody should have this kasha. You could have just skipped a couple steps over here. Hashem could have just told us, you look at the tcheles, it's dome lirakia sa'akovit. What is this whole process? It's dome liyam, so I got to look at this, and then I got to look at the sea, and then I got to think about the rakia, and then I look at the rakia, and I'm like, oh, kisei akovit. It's all the same color, no? So why do I got to have the whole intermediaries? Why do I need the in-between steps? I could just look at my tcheles and kisei akovit. That's it. When we went to the chevra who came this year to Auschwitz with me, we walked into the gas chamber in my Danik, and he saw kisei akovit. There was tcheles all over the walls. The walls were blue. Somehow there was dye over there. I mean, that's what the gas or machlok is how it got there. But he saw kisei akovit. Nobody was over there thinking, oh, that's the same color as the yam. Nobody was thinking that. What's this whole process? And so I'll tell you where I'm headed with this. When guys are in the beginning, you see, maybe also adults, and kids for sure. When you're a kid, you don't want to go to sleep. When you're a kid, you have a hard time going to sleep. And I want to explain why. And as you get older also, but when you get older, you're also still a kid. Great to see you. Kids don't understand that there's a tomorrow. They don't have. Kids live now. Kids want income now. Pizza now. Ices now. Donuts now. Kids live now. Smash out now. Exactly. Everything now. So go to sleep, but I want fun now. And as you get older, you realize there's a tomorrow. That's a big chiddush. I find that to be one of the major milestones of life. When a person comes to the hakara, that there's a tomorrow. You think this is petty, it's like, oh, but there's a calendar. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Obviously, it's tomorrow. I don't think most people don't realize this. Most people on Monday becomes Tuesday, and they don't want to let go. Tuesday, 1 a.m., Tuesday, 2 a.m., it's still Monday by then, and 3 a.m., and they can't go to sleep. Mamish can't go to sleep. They can't allow themselves to go to sleep, because what's going to be? And it's a great milestone of maturity when you realize there's a Tuesday. It's a big chiddush. It's like, oh, who decided that? When did they determine that there's going to be a Tuesday? Chakras is also tomorrow? I got to get the chakras. It's a big chiddush for a lot of people. Does chakras tomorrow? People who struggle waking up for chakras. It's never. I say never with confidence. It's never a waking up problem. Never. Never. It's an 11 p.m. problem. Nobody has a 7 a.m. problem. It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist, a 7 a.m. problem. But it does exist a major 11 p.m. problem. Major. The 11 p.m. problem is a worldwide epidemic. Nobody knows what to do at 11 p.m. But one thing they know is they can't go to sleep. They can't let go of now. They need money now. Donuts now. Pizza now. There's another. We ate pizza. Now they're making pizza. And maybe I could hop another pizza. Could I borrow a car? I could drive and buy another pizza. But Shacharis, I can't think about. I can't think about tomorrow. And such a major milestone when a person can shift and say, there's a tomorrow. And what happens when a person does that? Listen what happens. This is what happens. I'm not yet to my point. I'm really trying to slowly, slowly inch my way there. People come, they have anger problems with their wives. I'm talking now real Shalom Bayis stuff. I have great stories from old Talmida. Me and Meir, we gotta sit down and have a chavura. I want you to share war stories together. I don't have one Talmud. I have already multiple Talmidim that abuse their wives. Now, so I'm talking about this because reality. I like when everybody sits around and hears, abuse your wives. What kind of? Who are you hanging out with? What does that mean? I hang out with real people. I spend time with honest people. And honest people, normal people, healthy people, things happen. I have not encountered an intentional, malicious episode, not like that, but one thing leads to another, and then in a rage, you just, again, I'm not talking some crazy kind of, I don't know, ghetto mice. I'm not talking about a ghetto mice over here. You know, the wife walked out with like a broken ribs. I'm not talking about that. I'm not there. I don't have those stories. But stories that, you know, one thing, and she was yelling, and I was yelling, and we got into each other's face, and if you don't think you're going to get into good, healthy Shalom Bayis fights, then don't get married yet. You should wait to get married. Shalom Bayis fights are great. They're great, because you hash things out. You work it out. It's okay. But sometimes it crosses a line, and she gets in your face, and then she said something. Oh, my God, I can't believe she said that. And then about your mother got in all of a sudden. And then you just like, you move forward, sir, towards her. And then when you move forward, you know, you didn't realize how broad-shouldered you are. And you gave her a little push, and then she fell down, and she hurt her. One thing leads to another. And I always say to myself, you want my help? You hit your wife. I can't help you. You got to go to major, you got to get serious help right now. But if we would have spoken 11 steps ago, I would have told you very easy. Very easy. You know what I would have told you? Listen what I would have told you. You're going to laugh. You're going to think it's late sonas. I'm going to give you the most unintelligent piece of advice if you struggle with abusing your wife. This is the most unintelligent piece of advice. Make sure you're not hungry and make sure you're not tired. That's it. 90% of anger is because you're hungry or tired. That's it. If you're not hungry, maybe you're hungry because your wife didn't cook, and that created the problem. Go get takeout before you get home. If you're hungry or you're tired, I can't help you. When you're hungry or tired, you lost control. You're not holding the reins. You're already irritated. You're aggravated. You're in a place where you lost a certain sense of discipline. When you disciplined, healthy people don't touch, don't hit, are not violent. It doesn't exist. Who's violent? People who are stressed out. People who are uncomfortable. People who are agitated. You want to agitate a person? Make sure he doesn't get enough sleep. Maybe they teach you that. You know, you capture POWs. What do? No sleep. No sleep. Minimal food. We're not going to talk about, you know, I don't want to incriminate anything you've been doing. We're not going to make you uncomfortable. But when you have prisoners, that's what you do. That's how you make them a sugar. A little less food, a little less sleep. And again, like I said, this is the most unintelligent advice you've ever heard. Because it sounds ridiculous. And it's crazy that it's true. It's really true. Make sure you're not hungry. Make sure you're not tired. And obviously, you know, I'm dramatizing a little bit. Also, make sure you're in a good mood. make sure you're calm. And like the Ramban says, talk in a low voice. Don't raise your voice. If you commit not to raising your voice, never. But you raise your voice, and you're always hungry, and you're always agitated, and your job is so stressful, and every second of the day you're like anxious and nervous, and you wake up already, you're in a sweat, and your heart is, you know, you have already a heart disorder, because I don't even know what's going on in your internal life, and you expect you're not going to rage at your wife? I can't help you. 11 steps ago, we could have spoken. We could have spoken 11 steps ago. You would have never been there. Now, you want, we could trace back the steps. We could go back to 11 steps ago. But a lot of people, they commit. They get stuck. And we're talking on Shabbos. We started talking about living life by accident versus living life by choice. And like I said on Shabbos, most people live life by accident. What does it mean by accident? You wake up and sometimes good mood, sometimes bad mood. You get to shacharis, sometimes on time, sometimes late, sometimes early. You get to breakfast, sometimes you like it, sometimes you don't. You get to morning seder, sometimes you understand, sometimes you don't. You get to your charusa, sometimes he's pleasant, sometimes he's unpleasant. And your whole life depends on everything that's going on. Depends on if the alarm clock and how many snoozes and what was served for breakfast. And it's the most accidental lifestyle. It's not that you don't hold the reins. You're riding a horse that the horse is pushing out of control. You can't stop it. There are no reins. There's no saddle. There's nowhere to put the feet. You push it bouncing around on the horse. And the horse is going in all kinds of directions. You have zero control. That's how people live accidental lives. And there's something Rav Yerucham talks about, which is now finally I'm comfortable saying it. I dragged on long enough. So much of our lives is preparation. So much. If you were to count hours of time that you're doing productive things versus preparing to do productive things, you would see that preparation takes an unexpected, for sure, and an unfair amount of time. And somebody said, I think it was Alon quoted on Shabbos, the 54%, Roger Federer, right? So he said, Roger Federer, 54%. And I look at any athlete, and any athlete, you play 48 minutes in a basketball game, you play God knows how long a tennis game is, soccer, push it, nobody can figure out how those clocks work. But there is officially an amount of time, but you play a 48-minute basketball game, and for every 48 minutes, how many hours did you practice? Oh, infinite. If you can, what's the ratio of a professional athlete's practice to games? It's got to be a lot more than 100-1. I would venture to guess it's four figures. It's got to be well over 1,000-1. I'm talking about when he was a little kid. Since he was a kid, his whole life is practice. And then he gets in a game. Short game. And he doesn't play 48 minutes. If he's a great player, he plays 40 minutes. 40 minutes a game. You know, he's injured a lot. Today they sit players. What's he playing? 65 games a year at this point? 65 games a year the guy's playing. 30, 35 minutes a game if he's a superstar. And he practiced how many hours? Years. Years he practiced. And we know this. We know this to be true. And we expect, it's a real immaturity. It's a real, I'm not saying somebody's immature. I'm saying society, humanity has a real immaturity. We have an immaturity. I'm going to have a great morning seder today. Hell, how are you going to do that? By accident? I want to tell you something. I have a chashash. I have a suspicion. Forgive me for saying it publicly, but it's too good. It's too good not to. I learn with Avi in the afternoons. Avi's my afternoon Seder Chavrusa. I have a suspicion, sometimes when we're learning, that he looked at the art scroll before. I have a suspicion like that, and I'll tell you why I have that suspicion. And if I'm right or wrong, I don't want to know. I'll tell you why. Because when I was in YU, I had a Chavrusa my age. He was so much more advanced than me, and I couldn't keep up with him. He was my Ian, morning and night Seder Chavrusa. So in Ian, I davened a lot. I said a lot of Tehillim during morning Seder, and I doubt that I should keep up with him, and it was much harder. But at night, I had a way out. I learned the art scroll before night Seder, and that way I was able to keep up with him. We really learned well. But if I didn't learn ahead of time, I wasn't able to keep up with him. So I put in a good amount of time. I had a time for just the kids, just to be able to keep up with him. And sometimes Avi gives me a sense of like nostalgia, reminds me of me. He throws out like a good kasha or aura. I'm like, that's too good. Something. For, so if it's you, I give you a ton of credit. But if it's preparation, I give you probably more credit. And I can't say it enough that a guy wakes up and he says, today I'm going to have a great morning seder. What? How? How are you going to do that? You also, yesterday you struggled translating. Today you're going to still struggle translating. Yesterday you didn't have the best Harusa. Today you're still going to have the same guy you're looking at. How? Today's going to be an amazing davening. How? You still had the 11 p.m. problem. You went to sleep last night 3 a.m. You guys see like how I live my personal life. I wake up early in the morning not to learn. I wake up very early in the morning and I learn. But I don't wake up to learn. That's by accident. I wake up because if I'm tired when I daven, it's not myself. I don't beat my wife when I'm tired. But when I know when I'm tired, I can't daven. I just can't. I can't focus. So I need to wake up early enough. I could have a coffee, schmuck, and while I'm here anyways, I learn. But I wake up really just to have time before davening. And since I don't know what to do with myself, so I learn. So thank God Hashem gave me something to do over here. But I really wake up early to daven, but I can't daven right out of bed. It doesn't work. I know myself, it doesn't work. I never say this in public. It's just I'm in a mood right now. So I'll announce it publicly. I don't stay up all night shuas. Because when I did, I didn't daven. And for me, I believe a person should daven. So I stopped staying up all night shuas. And then I work out, you know, the learning and the medrash and how Hashem's not going to be angry at me. I try to work it out. But by me, I have a mitzvah to daven. And I know every year when I stayed up, I didn't daven. And I know myself. I didn't daven. So I said, Hashem, who am I kidding? I'm playing games with you over here. I want to daven. And I know you want me to daven. So I'm going to daven properly. Shavuos is very exciting for me. I want to daven the tefillahs of Shavuos. And learning, I'll try my best to do it in a way that will be work out. And I'm going to be the loser in shul that says Berachas HaTorah and Berachas HaTzitzis. So I'm not, because I don't publicize that I'm the loser in shul. I walk in like, oh, that was a rough night. You know. But I woke up early enough that I had enough time before davening to be able to not be tired. We know ourselves, not just me, we know ourselves. Without preparation, life doesn't go. You want to build wealth? To build wealth means to invest and invest and invest and invest and invest and invest. And in one good, fortunate day, you'll find yourself running a multi-billion dollar company. But if your interest is to pull out, to pull out, to pull out, to pull out immediately, so there's nothing developing. You can't become a wholesome person like that. So a lot of the eitzes that we ask, and it's good, parents, teachers, mentors, therapists, whoever, we ask guidance for, help me with this. Buddy, what are you doing? You got to take what somebody told me recently. I'm taking 500 foul shots before I get on the court in a real game. You're not taking 500 foul shots. So what do you expect? You expect you're going to shoot 90% from the foul line? It's impossible. How do you expect? You walk into davening and, oh, how could I better kavana my davening? I can't even talk to you. Let's go back 11 steps. 11 steps. Let's talk about what time do you go to sleep? Let's talk about what are you thinking when you go to sleep? Let's talk about when do you wake up and what's your plan? How do you strategize? What's your method throughout the day? And for people who have probably more of a yekishah personality, I imagine this is more natural. But even if you're a high-flying, floaty, kind of spiritual kind of guy, who talks more about hachanas than your people? Your high-flying, floaty kind of Jews, they love hachanas and hinani muchan muzumins and yihiratzins. They love that stuff. They live on that stuff. This is not yekisha Torah. This is just Torah. It's just Torah. And Hashem said, how are you going to incriminate the Jewish people if you cause steps 1 through 10? So they did step 11. What did they do? You did the whole thing for them. And by us, it's also like that. So we dig ourselves into these places, inyanim. People get into all kinds of inyanim. And then you're trying to figure out, what's the eitzah that I could pivot right now? You pivot right now? How are you going to pivot right now? You can't pivot right now. You got to backtrack. What led me to this? How did I get here? And on Shabbos, again, I'm just chazering. We started this conversation, this discussion, about living intentional lives versus living accidental lives. If you live an accidental life, you might be very rich. You might be very rich. You might be very learned. You might be very learned. You might be very spiritual. This could all happen by accident. It could happen by accident. People win the lottery too. Things happen by accident. That's not how we're meant to live. We're not meant to live by winning jackpots, throwing Hail Marys, and luckily getting the touchdown and you win the game. That's not how we're meant to live. We're meant to live hachanas. Every game that you play, you put in a good... My rabbi told me when I started speaking, I remember when he told me this, I thought he was crazy. And then I realized that he was the opposite. I thought he was very machmir. And then I realized he's very makel. He told me, whenever you speak publicly, you have to put in, he said from his own experience, you have to put in an hour preparation for every 5 minutes you speak publicly. And it could be because I'm slow processing, low IQ. You know, I'm very proud of these great characteristics Hashem blessed me with. For me, 5 minutes for every hour, not even close. For me, I would say I put in 3 hours for every 5 minutes. 3 hours means 2 hours and 55 minutes of my preparation nobody ever hears. It's just stuff that goes through my head and I learn and I see and I try to develop. And that 2 hour, 55 minute material comes and goes and disappears and I don't even know where it ends up. And then toch kedei, 3 hours, I find a 8 seconds from this and 12 seconds from here and another 19 seconds from here and I put it all together and I got 5 minutes. Now I can speak. I'm going to tell you a funny thing. We're going tomorrow to Lavi, and Rav Glan said, when you come, maybe there's a few chevra you could speak to. You know, people think, oh, you know, you speak a lot. I give a shmooz every day in the Shiva. Every day, 5:30 in the Shiva, I give a shmooz. How do I do it? You have no idea what I have to do that. And so Rav Glan tells me, oh, you're coming tomorrow. Why don't you give a shmooz to a bunch of chevra? Oh God, I gotta wake up at 2 a.m. this morning. You know, that's all that goes through my mind right now. I need to find another few hours in the day to get up and speak in front of people comfortably and to say things of intelligence, of value. Who could do that? Who has the ability to do that? You know, we're talking about the chinuch with the campers, and I told you guys in the beginning of the summer, prepare. Now, I'm sure some of you are, I'm sure some of you are not, and ain't no domen. You can't compare the two things. Life is hachana. Life is hachana. Life is preparation. And so many of your questions, I'm sorry I'm speaking so long, but so many of your questions, people struggle with learning, and they say, yeah, I don't connect to learning. And why do I have to learn a sugya? This case will never come up. You know what? That case comes up one time in your lifetime. This sugya, when you're going to be 47 years old, very funny situation you'll find yourself in, and you're going to have exactly this shaila. And the whole sugya, 4 days, was that when you're 47 years old, you prepared for that instance. You say, oh, that's not worth it. I want money now, donut now, pizza now, everything now. I want to go to sleep 3 a.m. I don't want to think about tomorrow. Well, yeah. You're not living. You're blowing by the wind. Wherever the wind blows you. And that's why it's Eitz Chaim Hila Mechazikim Bo. The Eitz doesn't move. The winds, the leaves, they fall, they grow, they fall, different colors, beautiful. Leaves are beautiful. But they don't last. They fall by the wayside. A person wants to really develop, build himself, to become a wholesome, well-rounded person. Hachanas. Tefillah needs hachanas. Real hachanas. Think about it. Prepare for it. Learning. Like Avi, I'm suspicious, does. Go into your room. Learn ahead of time. It's not fair. I'm learning already 25 years. He started learning 2.5 months ago. I don't know when he started learning, you know? He started learning a little bit ago. That's fair. It's a fair chavrusa. He's not the guy that's, I have a lot more experience. So how is it fair? Smart guy. He goes and he prepares. Why would you not? How could you not? It's crazy to think that a person wouldn't do that. So a person says, I'm struggling. Me, I can't figure out the bakiyas. My chavrusa can't figure out the bakiyas. So prepare. That's all you got to do. I'm not telling you, like I said, just don't be tired and don't be hungry. This is not, I'm not telling you ideas that are going to change the whole universe. Don't be tired and don't be hungry. Make sure you're well balanced. You feel good about yourself. You're ready to go. And then life goes, life works. And then you'll develop wealth. Great wealth will be developed if you take life like that. Okay, it's way too late, I'm sorry. But just by way of introduction, so Meir's beautiful in-laws are going to grace us with their presence, Mr. Shem, in a minute or two. And I just want to set the tone maybe before they get here like this. I can say from my corner, Meir could say it better, so he'll be mulled for me if I don't say it well. But these are two extremely impressive and accomplished people. Two people who are major members of the community in every way, Rabbi and Rebbetzin Yudin. Happens to be Rabbi Yudin, comes from a legacy of Rabbanim. Him, his father, his brothers, all his brothers? All the brothers, right? All the brothers. It's a mishpacha of mashpim, people who give to Klal Yisrael. Happens to be Rabbi Yudin, especially. I really, really am in awe and admiration of him because of what he does in DRS. He brings real avos haTorah to 12th graders in DRS, which is not an easy task. Not an easy task at all. And he brings real avos haTorah, and he does things differently. Creative, thoughtful. He really develops these kids in a beautiful, incredible way. And the Rebbetzin, she came out, runs the whole camp. When Jeremy was here last week, Jeremy spoke to us about how his right-hand people are Rebbetzin Yudin. He kept saying Rebbetzin Yudin, Rebbetzin Yudin. Rabbi Yudin obviously also. But Rebbetzin Yudin, she runs a huge, huge, huge piece. I don't want to say the entire camp, but a huge piece, the entire camp, whatever nusach you like. And to have an opportunity, a few minutes, we could sit, we could fabreng, we could talk, we could listen, we could hear, we could gain insight from them. I'm very much looking forward to this. And I'm going to lead the discussion and gear it towards specifically, but it doesn't have to stop there, specifically towards if guys are interested even in the possibility. Like the Meretz guys, who sometimes hang out here, the Meretz guys asked me, how many guys from your kollel are interested in making Aliyah? So I said, I could probably confidently say that 50% of the guys would consider it. At least 50% of the guys would consider it. How many guys are actually going to do it? I don't know. We'll see how life goes. But at this age, I think half of you would consider it. And I think the same thing. At this age, maybe half, I don't know numbers, but would consider the possibility of chinuch. And chinuch is big today. Chinuch is not like, I'm going to be a 10th grade Rebbe. Chinuch is vast. Chinuch is a camp director. Chinuch is shlichut. Chinuch is elementary school Rebbe. Chinuch is NCSY. Chinuch is JLIC rabbis on college campuses. Chinuch is huge. It's so adult chinuch, child chinuch. There's so many different opportunities in chinuch. And just to learn the sugya a little bit with two people who are extremely established and experienced, and have a lot of a wealth of information together, I think it'll be a great time. And also, like, it's a good hack with a couple, geschmack, like a power chinuch couple. No questions are off the table. Everybody should be comfortable asking any questions, but obviously respectful. And, you know, it's a Rebbetzin in the room. You gotta be extra respectful. Is a son-in-law in the room. You gotta be super respectful. Okay, so that's the plan. I'm sorry? I said we shouldn't be scared. Okay, good. And they're yet, they're yekish, they're mamish on time.